Back in the day, I was stationed at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. My time in the military is not something I like to think about too often. I like to think about how it ended even less. A few months before the end of my military contract, we were scheduled to head to the field for training for about 2 weeks. For those not familiar with what the field is, it's basically 2 weeks of weapons, tactics, and equipment training at a designated spot picked out by command. A lot of soldiers don't like the field since you're cut off from all communications like cell phones, bars, and most importantly, showers. I personally enjoyed the experience in the past and enjoyed the training with my battle buddies. The last time we went to the field, it was a month-long affair, so 2 weeks was not the end of the world for me. My alarm clock woke me up at about 03:30. The weapons draw would be at 04:30, which gave me an hour to wake up, take my last warm shower for 2 weeks, and have a proper homemade breakfast. Living in the barracks had its perks sometimes, and being within walking distance of the company was convenient on days like these. When I got to the company, a group of soldiers were already sitting around, barely awake, some downright asleep, and others chugging down energy drinks as both their breakfast and to stay awake. I felt completely out of place here as I was in my 20s, considered a fossil in the military. Most of my other soldiers in my platoon were barely old enough to smoke, not that the law never stopped them. We lined up to sign out our weapons and blanks for our training. Most of us carried both M4s and M17s into the field. I pitied the M249 gunners having to carry those heavy bitches around. Once everyone had arrived, gotten their shit and geared up, it was around 0545. We horseshoed around our platoon. The leader gave us a simple mission brief. Just follow my truck and keep your distance just like you learned in training for potential IEDs on the road. Gunners, let me catch you not covering your sectors of fire and I'm gonna smoke the crap out of you once we get back to our training area. Everyone got to their respective Humvees and were ready to roll out by 0600. With my luck, I ended up being the driver of Humvee number 1, where our fearless platoon leader decided to ride shotgun with. It took us about an hour of driving until we had reached the training site. The spot was far away from base, a heavily wooded area where we would make our home for the next 2 weeks. We parked the Humvees in a large open field and spent the next several hours setting up tents where the leadership would hang out and give classes in. By the time we had finished setting camp up, dusk was setting in and the firewatch roster was already being worked on. Luckily, we had enough people in the platoon that anyone getting a turn at guarding the camp only had to do it for an hour. I drew the short stick and ended up getting woken up from my guard shift around 0300. I was given night vision goggles by the last guard, and I made myself to the makeshift guard post on camp. The guard post was a Humvee located in the middle of camp that was good for 360 security. I hopped on the roof and dropped to the gunner's nest. Most of the shift was uneventful, as most fire guards are. I mostly tried out the NVGs to set my surroundings at night. The dark woods were as clear as day with the green tint to them. I was able to see so well that I saw two privates breaking away from camp to do a little something-something. They were both married, by the way. I decided to give them some privacy and look elsewhere, and as I did, I noticed something creepy. I was barely hanging on to my cautiousness when I spotted something in the woods. Directly in front of our camp, maybe 100 meters away, there was a figure by the tree line. From where I was, it looked like a man was observing me. No way he could make out much in the dark from such a distance away, but I felt like he was staring right into my soul. My wristwatch alarm went off, and I almost shit my pants. By the time I looked away to turn my alarm off, the figure in the woods was gone. I didn't dwell on it too much as I was extremely tired and my eyes were probably playing a trick on me. I left to wake up the next guard per the roster, and I slept inside my Humvee in case my eyes weren't deceiving me. Waking up was around 0800, and after chow, it was time for our first class in Land NAV. Luckily, no lieutenants would be in charge of any maps. We broke off into groups of three and set off into the woods. We received various coordinates we would have to travel to in the woods. It'd probably be some item that would be waiting for us. The woods were untouched in most of the area we traveled through, which meant we had to keep an eye out for uneven terrain and venomous snakes. A few miles into our hike, we reached our first coordinate location where a lone cone was waiting for us in the middle of the woods. On it was a photo of a young soldier with only a first and last name to identify him. I decided to pull out my cell phone and take a picture, so we had evidence that we had made it to each and every coordinate. Before we knew it, we had hiked half a day into those woods, and by the time we had made it to our last coordinate, the sun was beginning to set. We better start heading back before it gets too dark. I don't want to be lost in these woods, I said while taking out my flashlight to light the way when night fell. We had started making our way back to camp when not 10 minutes in, night had engulfed the woods. One of our group, Carrion, had a disturbing comment to make. Guys, I think we're being followed. The mere thought sent shivers down my spine, but I tried to ignore the feeling. We made a quick stop and I replied, "What makes you say that?" Before I could finish talking, I heard it, and I think everyone else heard it too. Somewhere away from us, maybe 30 meters in the direction we had just come from, was the sound of leaves and grass being crushed by something walking on them. Whatever was making the sound must have seen us stop because the steps stopped abruptly. I didn't want to seem too concerned to keep my other two battle buddies from falling into some sort of panic. "Come on, enough rest," I signaled for them to keep going. The other soldier, Diaz, moved up next to me. "Do you think it's some sergeant messing with us?" he quietly whispered, not to alert whoever was following us. "Whatever it is, it's not an animal. It stopped when we did, not to alert us." Carrion moved up to join the conversation. "Should we make a run for it? I'm sure we could make it back faster if we ran." No one among us wanted to run in the dark with heavy equipment in some unknown land. I shut the idea down almost immediately. "We don't know what we're dealing with. If it's a predator, running might provoke it. Keep your bearings, and if it gets too close, fire warning shots. It won't know we are just packing blanks." We kept making our way back to camp, our guard up every step of the way. With every minute that went by, we were sure whatever was following us was not someone from camp messing with us. They would have tried something by now, maybe some sort of ambush to teach us a lesson of some kind. But whoever or whatever they were, they kept their distance. The only evidence of their presence was slightly out of sync footsteps from our own in the darkness. By the time we were about a mile from camp, he made his move. Something ran past us in the dark. Whatever it was fast. Every time one of us tried to catch a glimpse of it with our flashlights, we would only see the forest and its trees. We saw the glowing eyes in the dark first, watching after afar and slowly creeping closer. There were many of them. I counted a half dozen eyes until one got impatient enough to get spotted by one of us. Diaz was pointing his flashlight to a tree 10 meters from us, and hugging the tree trunk was a thin figure, patchy hair covering parts of its body, bony hands attached to what seemed like razor-sharp claws, and a grotesque ear-to-ear smile. Somebody fired a burst shot, sending the creature in front of us running on all fours to somewhere in the darkness. Pure panic had a death grip over us. I barely remember sprinting in the other direction, courtesy of adrenaline. I recall my heavy breathing and how out of breath I was running at top speed with full gear on. I remember shooting at glowing eyes in the darkness and the deafening sound that followed. I remember somebody screaming in the dark and me not even stopping to look back at who it was. I remember somebody yelling at me. Then I realized it was a sergeant who was trying to get me to respond, trying to snap me out of my catatonic state. "Specialist, what the F happened?" He continued to yell as I was able to finally react. I didn't say anything immediately. I realized I was back at camp. My platoon was staring at me in horror, and I noticed I was covered in blood. I was the only one in my group that had made it out of the woods.
"There's something in the woods. We need to leave now."
I instinctively pointed my M4 back at where I had come from, remembering the futileness of it. I was firing blanks. Suddenly, I found myself being tackled to the ground and restrained by multiple soldiers who disarmed me and knocked me out. Turns out, coming out of the woods all bloodied up and missing two battle buddies did not inspire confidence in my word. When I came to, I was inside one of the tents that was being used by leadership as a makeshift prison for me. My hands and legs were tied up with zip ties, and there were two guards watching me who immediately told our platoon leader that I was awake. When he walked into the tent, he was in full Vietnam mode, and I knew I was in for some torture. To my surprise, he just grabbed a chair and sat in front of me.
"I'm only going to ask you this once. Where are the bodies of Diaz and Carrion? I promise if you answer anything else other than that exact location, you're going to have a very bad day, soldier. We have a search party out in the woods right now, and your cooperation could make this move faster."
I was in complete shock. He didn't believe it yet, but he had just sent another group of soldiers to their deaths unnecessarily.
"You gotta call them back here. They don't know what's out there."
My platoon leader decked me across the face, then proceeded to kick my ribs while I was on the ground. When he was finished, the only thing I asked was for him to check on the group to see that I wasn't lying. He seemed to consider beating me some more before he reached into one of his pant pockets and retrieved a walkie.
"LT, this is Platoon Daddy. Come in."
The static and zero reply was deafening.
"I told you, there's something in the woods and you just sent those men to die."
He kept trying the radio a few more times until both of us were able to hear faint gunfire in the distance. The platoon sergeant ran out of the tent, and I was left bleeding where I was. They had taken my bulletproof vest off and searched me while I was unconscious. I didn't have enough luck left to find my multi-tool in one of my pockets. The guards came back into the tent and cut my restraints, helping me outside. Everyone was in defense positions around the camp, no doubt under some foolish belief that they could take out whatever was coming for us. I heard a deafening sound and realized soldiers were shooting at something in the dark. The guards that had dragged me across the camp suddenly dumped me next to an equipment tent and ran off to join whatever commotion was happening. The tent had equipment meant for troop training, and I immediately recognized the box where they had stored the NVGs. I quickly grabbed one and turned it on to see what the hell was going on outside. Soldiers were being attacked by the same creatures that attacked my group in the woods. Again, I could make up the six figures cutting through the entire platoon of good friends.
I use the NVGs to low crawl across the camp and avoid the creature's attention. My plan was to get to the Humvee and potentially make it back to base with some luck. I tried to ignore the screams of terror around me and the gunfire died down. When I managed to crawl to the nearest truck, I saw the reason for the screams around me. Two creatures were holding a soldier down, one of his arms, another at his legs, while two others were digging into his belly and eating his intestines. The soldier, who, thanks to the night vision, I could tell was our platoon leader, was screaming in terror as they ate him alive. Once his screams died down, like he had gone to sleep, the two creatures holding him down pulled on his limbs, ripping them clean off. I managed to get to the Humvee undetected. Luckily, we didn't keep them closed, and no keys are needed to turn them on. I gently and quietly opened the door and flipped the switch to turn the Humvee on. It roared as loudly as an 18-wheeler, and when the lights came on, a group of those creatures were dining on another soldier 10 feet in front of me. The soldier actually reached a hand out for help before finally succumbing. I shifted the stick to drive and was ready to run the effers over when I noticed light tapping on my window. One of those things was standing outside, lightly tapping the window glass with its bloody claws and smiling at me with its blood-stained mouth. I floored it. I drove over the creatures in my way and drove for miles until I had managed to reach the military base where I was promptly arrested and thrown in the brig for a while. After what I guess was their investigation into my version of events, I was released from imprisonment and medically discharged from service. I used the pension that the government gave me to move as far away as I could from those woods in North Carolina. It was a muggy July evening in 2009 when I stepped out of the air-conditioned barracks and into the thick North Carolina night. The air felt like a warm, wet blanket as I walked over to the guard tower. My boots crunched the gravel underfoot, the sound echoing through the quiet base. "You're 5 minutes early again," my buddy Jonesy said without looking up from his magazine as I climbed the metal stairs. "Can't stand being cooped up in there," I replied, taking a seat beside him. The tower's window framed the base's perimeter, a sea of shadowy buildings and vehicles bathed in the glow of security lights. We settled into the usual routine of the night watch, our eyes scanning the horizon, the occasional crickets serenading the darkness. The air was so still, it was like the world had taken a deep breath and held it. Then, just as we were getting into a debate about who had the best barbecue in the area, the quiet was shattered by a sudden piercing light. Both of us snapped to attention, hearts racing as we stared up at the sky. There, hovering silently, was an object unlike anything we had ever seen before. A series of lights, floating in a perfect formation, unlike any aircraft we had been trained to identify. They were spears of light, almost ethereal in their beauty, and they hung in the air like celestial ornaments. "What the?" Jonesy breathed, his eyes wide with shock. I fumbled for the radio, my hands shaking. "Control, this is Tower 3. We have unidentified aerial phenomena in our vicinity." The static on the other end crackled, and then a voice, equally as stunned as ours, replied,
"Shh, roger that, Tower 3. Visual confirmed. Stand by for instructions."
But instructions never came. We watched, transfixed, as the lights began to dance, moving at speeds that defied physics, weaving in and out of each other's paths. They changed colors from a deep blue to a fiery red and back again. The sight was memorizing, but there was an underlying tension that had our skin crawling. We knew that we were witnessing something that didn't belong in our skies. The lights grew closer, and we could make out the metallic sheen of the orbs, hinting at the technology far beyond our understanding. They moved with a purpose that was both graceful and terrifying. "Do you think they know we're here?" Jonesy whispered, his knuckles white as he gripped the tower's railing. I swallowed hard. "They know." The orbs hovered above the base for what felt like an eternity. Their silent presence, a stark reminder that we were not alone. And then, as abruptly as they had appeared, they vanished. The night returned to its usual rhythm, but the silence that followed was anything but comforting. The questions swirled on our heads like a tornado, and we both knew that nothing would ever be the same again. We reported the incident, but the higher-ups brushed it off as a weather phenomenon, something about temperature inversions and swamp gas. But we knew what we had seen. Over the next few weeks, we noticed that our conversations were being monitored, our every move scrutinized. It was as if we had stumbled upon a secret that we weren't meant to know. The sightings continued, always at night, always in the same spot. We tried to capture them on camera, but every photo and video that we took came out blurry, as if the objects were somehow interfering with our technology. The only proof we had was the vivid images burning into our memories. One evening, as we were getting ready to end our shift, something strange happened. The lights didn't just disappear this time, they descended, coming closer to the ground. We watched in awe as they formed a pattern, drawing a perfect triangle in the sky before dissipating into nothingness. "What does it mean?" Jonesy whispered. I shook my head, my gut telling me that we were on the brink of something much larger than ourselves. "I don't know, but we can't keep this to ourselves anymore." The next day, we decided to take action. We approached our commanding officer and told him everything we had seen. His initial skepticism melted away as we recounted the events, and he called in a team of specialists to investigate. The base was buzzing with whispers and speculation. The tension was palpable as we waited for answers. But as the days turned into weeks, it became clear that the military wasn't going to tell us anything. They were as clueless as we were, or so they claimed. Then one night, during our watch, the radio crackled to life with an urgent message.
"All personnel, this is not a drill. A secure perimeter is to be established immediately. Repeat, this is not a drill."
Our hearts racing, we jumped to our feet and peered out the window. The sky was filled with a flurry of activity. Helicopters, jeeps, and armed soldiers moving swiftly in the direction of the usual sighting spot. We watched in disbelief as the orbs descended again, but this time they were not alone. A massive black triangle emerged from the clouds, its edges blurred, as if they were not entirely of this world.
"What the hell is that?"
Jonesy gasped. The object hovered above the base, dwarfing everything in its path. We could feel the power it emitted, a vibration that resonated in our bones. And then, as if it had decided we had seen enough, it shot straight up into the night sky, the orbs following in its wake. The silence that followed was deafening, the base in a state of lockdown. Our world had been irrevocably changed. The question was no longer whether we believed in UFOs, it was what their visit meant for our futures, for the fate of humanity itself. And as we stood there watching the stars, we realized we were just two small soldiers caught in the cosmic dance of secrets and shadows, with no way of knowing the music's final beat. Days turned into weeks,
and the specialist's presence grew more intense. They set up equipment, took readings, and asked us endless questions, but their faces remained stoic, giving nothing away. Our nightly watches were no longer mundane. Every shadow played tricks in our minds, every strange noise echoing with the weight of the unknown. One evening, as the sun dipped below the horizon, a figure approached our tower. It was our CO, flanked by two stern-faced men in black suits. "Gentlemen," he began, his voice tight with tension, "you've been selected for a special mission." The suits handed us envelopes, each one sealed and stamped with the emblem of the military's most elite division for unexplained phenomena. Inside was a set of instructions, a non-disclosure agreement, and a warning that our lives would never be the same. The mission was simple. We were to report for training and prepare to be the eyes and ears on the ground for any further sightings or contact. Our world had shifted from the black and white lines of duty to the kaleidoscope of doubt and wonder. As we packed our bags and said our goodbyes to the life we knew, we couldn't help but feel a mix of fear and excitement. We were about to step into a realm that had only ever existed in the pages of science fiction novels and the whispers of the conspiracy theorists. The training was rigorous, pushing us to our limits and beyond. We learned about the advanced technologies, interdimensional theories, and the history of UFO encounters that had been kept hidden from the public. And all the while, the image of those lights, those orbs, and the massive black triangle haunted my dreams. The night of our first mission, we were dropped into the heart of the deserted stretch of the base. The air was electric with anticipation. We knew we were being watched. But by whom? The aliens or our own government? As the hours ticked away, we heard nothing, saw nothing. The darkness was absolute, the only sound our own breathing and the occasional crackle of static in our earpieces. And then, without warning, the sky lit up. The orbs were back, and they were not alone. This time there was an eerie pulsing energy in the air that seemed to beckon us closer.
"Stay put."
Our CO's voice crackled into our ears.
"Do not engage."
But as the lights grew brighter, something inside of us yearned to understand. We were no longer just soldiers, we were witnesses to the universe's greatest secret. And we were ready to face whatever the night had in store for us. We watched as the orbs grew closer, their colors swirling in a hypnotic pattern that seemed to speak to us on a primal level. They hovered just out of reach, as if testing our resolve. And then, in a heartbeat, the largest orb broke away from the group, drifting lazily towards us. Our breaths held, we stared into the pulsing core, feeling a strange kinship with the alien intelligence that must be controlling it. As it approached, the orb grew brighter, casting an otherworldly glow on the sandy ground beneath our boots. Suddenly it stopped, hovering just a few feet away. A hatch on the side of the orb slid open, revealing an interior that defied description, a swirl of light and color that seemed to hold the very essence of creation. A tentacle-like appendage emerged, reaching out to us with a gentle curiosity. Jonesy and I exchanged a look, the gravity of the moment weighing heavily on us. This was it, the moment we had prepared for. We had no idea what the aliens wanted, but we knew that we had to make a choice. To run or to reach out. With trembling hands, I raised my arms, palms open. The appendage touched my hand, sending a jolt of energy up my arm that seemed to flood my brain with knowledge and understanding. Images of worlds beyond our own, civilizations so ancient that it made ours look like mere child's play, and a message of peace and unity filled my mind. The touch was brief, but the connection was profound. And in that instant, we knew. These beings were not here to harm us,
They were here to offer a glimpse of what could be. The orb retreated, the hatch closing with a hiss, and it joined the others into the sky, their dance continuing as if nothing had happened. We were left standing there, forever changed by the encounter. Our mission had taken a turn none of us had expected. The lines between enemy and ally had buried into oblivion. We were no longer just observers. We were now participants in a cosmic ballot that had been unfolded for a millennia.